Hey there, you are watching Deprogram's Q&A episode for Monday, May 18th, 2026. Thank you so much for watching and tuning in. We are here normally Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time for Deprogram with Ted Rall and Jamarl Thomas. However, as some of you know already, on Mondays and Wednesdays, we also do a 12 noon Q&A show, which is more freewheeling, wild and crazy. You can ask anything you want about anything, any topic. You can follow up a question, keep a conversation going. You can ask JT or myself or Robbie or all of us or two of us anything you want. Comment any way you want. Just put your comments and questions into the Rumble chat or the YouTube chat while we're live in the 12 noon hour Eastern time. And we will get to them. Producer Robbie West will sort through them and put them up, and we will consider them all, because we do need to make money in order to make this show worthwhile. And frankly, we're not really making enough money right now. We do put priorities to Rumble Chats, which are the paid version, and the Super Chat, Rumble Rants, sorry, and Super Chats, which are the paid version on YouTube. Don't forget, as our friend Trent likes to say, consider becoming a tier three supporter on YouTube. Lots of goodies to be had there, including, not limited to, but maybe the highlight is a custom special show that we'll be doing just for you guys. So, all right. So that's more like a coffee clutch than anything else. Let's see. Robbie, anything? Am I forgetting anything?
Nope, you nailed everything.
Okay, cool. Thank you. All right. So let's get straight to it. We have some questions already in the queue here. So let's get to it. Okay. John Park, Q&A. You guys talked about wages this morning. What should be a proper wage and raise in these times realistically? I think boomers think a dollar an hour raise is enough when it really should be $5. Thanks.
Oh, like basically, what would that number be? I mean, because right now, what this in for the federal government is what, 725 or something? Some
That's
insane.
right. That's
Yeah.
exactly. It's been there since 2009.
Yeah. I mean, if you're talking about productivity and the increases in productivity versus the wages, okay, these lines have diverged significantly. And I'm saying that because if I point out $20 an hour, people sometimes recoil, which is a weird recoil to me. Like the secretary is saying, well, I only make $19 an hour. Why do I want the fry cook making 20? It's like, dude, okay, maybe you're getting cheated too. Maybe if we're talking about how productivity rises, maybe wages should rise with productivity and maybe they should be pegged to one another. Meaning if the companies are doing well, they shouldn't be able to just put them in their pockets and walk away.
Couldn't agree more. So I've written about this extensively and I've done back of the envelope calculus. So there's so many things to talk about here. So obviously we're focused here on the minimum wage, but that shouldn't be the only thing. But you know, the minimum wage, it does push up everything else, right? So if the minimum, let's say you're getting paid what becomes the future minimum wage, well, obviously you're going to have a lot more room to pressure your boss for a raise to say, I don't want to be earning minimum wage. So it affects everyone across, you know, all the way up the scale. Okay, maybe not all the way up, but it affects the bottom tier of wage earners for sure. Okay, so if the it is a fact that if we calculate based on the official US government inflation rate since 1970, you know, basically at the height of the Vietnam War and sort of right around, the reason I choose 1970 is that's when income inequality started to really go up. And workers got less and less reward for, in real terms, for the productivity gains that you mentioned. So if that were the case, the current, rather than 725 an hour, the hourly wage would be over $30 an hour. Now, if you calculate the, if you adjust for the improvements in productivity, in other words, you're paying a worker to be as productive in 2026 as they were in 1970, then it's more like $60 an hour. And that's not even including the fact that the official inflation rate is totally downplayed. You know, I mean, right now the official inflation rate is what, 3.75%? You and I both know, JT, we all know that's a joke. If you think that like your rent, your food, you know, and I'm talking about major parts of what you spend money on, gas, you know, electricity, if you think that only goes up less than 4% a year, that's hilarious, okay? So the real annual inflation rate these days is closer to 12%. There's a website called Shadow Government Statistics that allows you to calculate the real unemployment rate and the real inflation rate the way it used to be calculated, and just doesn't, I mean, they've done so many games to these stats. This is all a way of saying, like, you could make a credible argument for a $70 or an $80 an hour minimum wage in a world where it's $7.25. 20 ain't nothing. I think, you know, and you've already got a lot of states and cities at 17, 18, 19, 20 an hour, because frankly, the federal minimum wage is so out of whack that even for burger flippers at Wendy's, they can't find anyone for $9 an hour, right? So they have to offer that. And all the municipalities and states that have jacked it up to 15 to 20, nobody's reporting higher unemployment. All the scare tactics are not true. All right, so to answer the question, I think we should be going to 40 right away. And I think with scaling quickly, I don't think we go to 40 and let it sit for another 15 years at 40. I think we keep going. I mean, everything is so much more expensive. Look at what a car cost in 1970. Look at what, you know, average rent cost, college tuition. What did a bag of groceries cost? I remember my mom sending me to buy groceries. And for $18, when I was a kid, growing up in Ohio, you could get 4 bags of groceries.
Wow.
Now it's like you can come out of the grocery store with 1 bag of groceries. And, you know, if you get a few organic things, easily drop $100. So, I mean, things have gone so far up. And you could say, well, this will have an inflationary effect on the economy. That's true. But I would rather risk that than risk, you know, kids not being able to see the doctor because their parents can't, their salary won't afford, doesn't allow them to afford it.
Yeah, minimum wage can't pay for rent anywhere in this country. And I'm saying that literally. They did the study and pointed out it can't pay for anything. And yeah, productivity should matter. Like, meaning, if you are expending your energies at a particular company for a particular wage, and the company is doing extraordinarily well, why shouldn't wages keep up? And I get the capitalist argument is going to be, well, we're not paying you in the context of us with shared interests. I'm this person who owns the company. I'm the one that makes the money. You're just doing something for a wage. So I don't really care what your wage is. I'm not paying you a wage for productivity. I'm paying you a wage, just the lowest I can pay for anybody to do this particular job. Okay, I get that. But then that becomes a legal issue, right? That becomes a government issue about whether or not we have laws to ensure that productivity effectively goes along with the idea of a company, basically shared interest for the people within the context of a company. And I get it. People are like, hey, that's a little communist. Fair enough. I accept that, right? If that's the way they want to cast that, fair enough. I think workers should get paid what they are worth, and what they are worth is on some level determined by the productivity of that particular company. That's the point that I'm trying to make. Also, the unemployment thing, yeah, they don't include food and energy in that number.
Ridiculous.
Thing that most people pay for. Like, meaning, like when you are paying rent, when you're going to groceries, when you're doing that stuff is food and energy. Those are like some of the biggest expenses that people have. Also, I think they keep that number low. As you point out, they dummy those numbers so people don't bitch about their situation. Like if you're unemployed, and let's say you've been unemployed for a year, whatever that position is, maybe a program or whatever else, and you look at the unemployment rate and it's 3.9%. What are you thinking about you? Like, meaning, aren't you looking at that number thinking to yourself, okay, this is my fault because the employment rate is not high? And is there an incentive to keep that number perceptionally low? And I guess, Robbie, you're here. So I remember Ted had to go in the background somewhere. That's okay. You can answer that one also.
Well, no, I mean, just see, here's the whole problem, right? Because as the cost of labor goes up, the incentive for automation is going to go up.
True.
Because people are going to, let's be honest, if you're in business, you're in business to make money, so that way you can have yourself a life, right?
That's your profit. Yeah. And by the way, I agree with you. I've gotten to a fight with lefties on this because I've said the exact same thing. It's like, dude, if you increase the minimum wage, you're going to increase the incentive for automation. That's not a negative, meaning I want people to get paid, but it is a truth. But no, go ahead,
well, it's just, I think this is probably one of the places where some people on the left and me might agree. Like, for example, one of the biggest jobs in the country is driving trucks, being truck drivers, right. Especially right. If you're just uneducated types. If you wanted to destroy the American middle class, self-driving trucks would be exactly how you would do it, because you would put 1 million people out of work, maybe more. You know, the drivers, the mechanics, the logistics hubs, all of that stuff. And I cannot think language. Yeah, I cannot think of a better way to destabilize the country and just blow it up. But yet that's what the oligarchs want to do. And yeah, I pointed that out to Republicans and fellow right wingers. Like, well, Robbie, you sound like a communist. I was like, well, where is it written that the free market is the end all be all? Stability is more important than your profit margins.
Yes, correct.
And Robbie, I
gotta be honest, Robbie, you don't sound like a right winger. And let me explain why.
It depends on the topic.
True, and that's fair enough, right? Because when people talk to me, they're like, they think like I'm on the left, but they would hit me on certain things, and they'd be like, I don't understand why you're on the left, and it's like, well, I'm just being honest because I'm stuck with reality, right? I'm changing. I made the same argument. That the country is ill-prepared for the requirements of the future. And that is one of them. Because you already have self-driving trucks and self-driving cars. And if you look in the future, like 5 years, those things are going to be riding across the country because it has every incentive in the world for some capitalists to not have a human being in that truck and to have that truck to just keep going the entire way through without any interventions. Hell, you may even use sunshine to power the truck or whatever you power it. The truck can automatically go and get itself filled and then keep going. I'm saying the moment that you do that, it is easily conceivable that that's like 5 years. And we're not talking about Ubers. We're not talking about taxis. All of these things. And you think how many people work in these industries? Up in smoke.
That's what I'm saying.
But that's a government issue that has to deal with it. I don't think we should. And let me ask you, do you think we should somehow inhibit technology? Or do you think we as a government plan for the technology and deal with it before and as it happens? Like, because from my point of view, I don't want a human being dropping French fries. I don't want a human being driving a truck. I would rather that human being do something better with their time. But of course, the question is going to be, okay, how do those people get paid?
Yeah, well, it's
money, not necessarily jobs.
Yeah, well, it's that, and also people, especially young men, you got to have something to do.
True.
Because if you're a young man, and if you're just running feral and you're bored, you're typically going to start getting into trouble. I know I did. I blew up a road when I was like 16 years old. I straight up legitimately exploded a road in Northwest Florida. I blew up a road. Yes. Why did I do this? Because I was bored.
Boys will be boys.
I mean, that's it, right? So you got to have something. You got to keep it busy. That's one of the reasons why marriage is important. Married men have less testosterone than single men. So that means they're less violent. That means they're less likely to screw stuff up because they're getting laid. I mean, this is what happens.
Wait,
to answer your question.
Is that, and keep moving. Hold on, wait. Is that true?
Yes.
First?
Yeah, check it out.
Less testosterone.
Married men typically have less testosterone than single men do, especially young married men. Yeah, check it out. That is a statement of fact.
So their wives pacify them in a way.
Yeah, because the more sex that you have, I mean, your testosterone level goes down. That's a biological function of it.
Is that true? By the way, I didn't know this. That's why I'm shocked by this.
Yeah,
so the more sex you have, So yeah. People who are in sales, their testosterone should be like just.
That's one of the reasons why, like, if you're a pro athlete, like say in the Olympian level, you have as little sex as possible because it drives your testosterone level down. Testosterone makes men aggressive. It makes men violent. It makes men do stupid things. It makes men decide to go start putting ladders up on the top of a truck to see what will happen. I mean, testosterone is an incredibly powerful force. And that's one of the reasons why a stable society, it has a society where young men are married and making babies, because that aggression is funneled out of them in the form of their sex life. That's 100% a statement of fact.
Or sent into the military to go fight other people.
Yeah, exactly. But of the two,
in doing that, just for clarity, like meaning a government doesn't necessarily want its population of, let's say, horny, aggressive, testosterone-filled men rampaging the streets. They would prefer them rampaging other people's streets. It's like an incentive built into it.
Oh, I didn't
know that, Robbie. I swear to God, I didn't know. That's amazing to me.
Well, for me, as a Christian, marriage and kids is important to me. And so one of the things I'm looking at is, why would a government want to do this? Now, if you want to have a stable society, I'm straight up, you need to have your young men get married and have kids, because it siphons that testosterone out. It siphons out that aggression. And so if you eliminate all these jobs and all of a sudden you have hundreds of thousands of young men with literally nothing to do, then you're going to have hundreds of thousands of young men just causing all kinds of hell and havoc in your country, which is the last thing that you want to have happen.
Guys, what are you talking about? What was the question?
Well, what we're talking about is in regards to this is about automation with wages, and talking about, you know, I brought up, you know, that the worst thing you could possibly do for the working class would be eliminating, you know, the trucking industry and replacing it with self-driving cars and trucks, that kind of thing, because you're hollowing out what's left of the middle class, and then you're just going to have just major problems. And there's a question, and I would love to hear y'all's opinion on this,
Robbie, but therein lies the rub. You're hollowing out the middle class if you allow it to happen without having some kind of governmental structure in place to deal with.
Well, men need something to do. That's the whole point. So if you put 100,000 men out of work, and let's just be honest here. Not everyone is going to be an engineer. Not everyone's going to be is going to be able to work on the stock market. Yeah. These young men are going to need something to do, not just to get a paycheck, their stipend every month. They need something to do.
Agreed.
Because if they don't have something to do, they're going to make something to do, which typically is going to involve something stupid, maybe violent, possibly both.
Agreed.
That's the problem. And so that's why you need to have jobs. Outsourcing all the jobs, replacing what's left with automation, is how you destroy your country.
Agreed.
And so,
agreed.
And so for me, I would 100% sacrifice the so-called free market to make sure I have a stable society. I understand that, you know, Mr. Oligarch, that you, Mr. Bezos, that you will make billions of dollars in profits if you're able to take all these jobs away from these warehouses and just make all these workers peasants. But for the good of the country, I will not allow you to do it. If you try it, I'll stack your body on a lawn with a bullet in your head, because you are a threat to the state at that point.
I can find other jobs for people, Robbie.
But how? How?
Like, for example, just real quick. I agree with you. I agree with everything you just said, with the exception that I don't want to inhibit technological innovation. Because from my point of view, I don't want people. Look, there are so many things that are falling apart, mm-hmm. that are not necessarily in the best of shape in this country, that need to be repaired. Fix. We're not talking about infrastructure. You're talking about high-speed rail. Help make little tubes for people to go through. Make a space station.
Factories aren't coming back here. So to do what you're talking about, listen, I agree with you. If we brought back the industrial base, if we took these factories out of mothballs up in Detroit, started making steel, started making infrastructure, started building stuff, then you can make the argument, okay, we could probably go into self-driving cars.
And we can do that.
But that's we're not going to. Our government is not ever going to allow that to happen.
All I'm saying is, it's a political choice.
Of course
it is. If you had somebody who came out and said, we're going to do this, the entirety of the population would love that guy.
100%.
But that's kind of my point. You can accept the automation thing because I don't want people driving trucks. I don't want people being up for 40 hours or whatever the hell it takes to drive the truck. I don't want people dropping french fries. I don't want people doing that.
But what if they want to? If people need something to do.
They want to drop french fries?
Some people do. Like teenagers who are going to school, want to earn some money, maybe be able to go and take your girlfriend on a date and take her to the movies and stuff. And you know that you can find some crappy job at a McDonald's? Hell yeah. Because you want to get to know this girl, you want to date her, potentially marry her, maybe have kids. You can't do that if you don't have a job.
I'm saying I can tax the shit out of Bezos regarding the robots, meaning I can make those robots earn money for the state. And I can pay that kid, meaning I'm not trying to take away the kid's job. I want him to have a better job, is the point that I'm trying to make.
What's that job going to be? Okay, then make the case. What's the job going to be? My son's 16 years old. He works as a bag boy at a grocery store.
Right.
It's a boring, meaningless job. So we automated the way. What is he going to do?
Would your son take a job, let's say, doing something a bit more productive for more money? Meaning, because from my point of view, I'm not stopping him from getting a job. I'm talking about the type of job that your son may be able to get. That's awesome. Just not a bag boy, but maybe some. I mean, think of all the jobs associated with building stuff, especially if you're talking about construction projects around the country itself, or making up, cleaning up the thing. And I don't mean like janitorial work. I'm just saying from the standpoint of the things that need to be fixed and built in this country, you're talking about bridges, roads, et cetera. Think of all the administrative jobs that go along with just the hard construction jobs in and of itself, or even this kind of management of being able to even do something like that in regards to revitalizing the country. I'm talking about spring in America. Like this should be like Republican mind, like, yes, spring in America.
I agree with you. Listen, I agree with everything you just said, but the point is, though, where you're talking about those jobs, those industrial jobs, let's just assume that they're not going to come back because they're not. They're never coming back. And so as the cost of things keep going up, because we keep exporting IOUs for things actually manufactured overseas, the cost of living continues to go up. Yes. And then the capitalists, in order to expand their profits, are then going to automate away what few crappy jobs are left. That's the point that I'm making. I agree with everything you just said, but it's not going to ever happen.
I accept your point.
The Democrats, if they wanted to win, if they want to win people like me, training issues, abortion, everything else aside, say we are going to make these companies come back and start reopening these factories, I would hold my nose and I would vote for them. But there's not a Republican or a Democrat who will ever do what you're talking about doing.
Well, they won't do it under the context that we have now. In the same way that I would imagine in the 20s, nobody thought that FDR would do the stuff that FDR did. The guy was a capitalist. But the guy did it because the environmental circumstances created a situation where it could be done. I'm saying I agree with you. But when we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people losing their jobs, those people are going to be screaming for a political solution to what is effectively. I mean, look, the guy who.
It'll start a civil war.
The guy who was servicing the horse and buggy probably had feelings about the car. Or the guy who was doing the elevator probably had feelings about the elevator being automated. That's always the case. There's always a tension within that society over that stuff. I'm saying.
But back then, though, there's another industry that you're able to go to. So I say, if you're a Wainwright.
Creative destruction works if you've got creation happening.
Yeah, but right now we have destruction, but there's no creation.
Yeah.
That's the whole problem.
The old order is being destroyed, and not only is the new order not being created, there's no sign that there will ever be a new order.
Yeah. Right. And here's a question for y'all. Yeah,
give me one moment. I'm listening, Robbie.
No, okay. You're good. So here's a question that I would like to get y'all's input on. So this is from Carlos. As leftists, how did the two of you justify working with a racist and fascist right-winger like Robbie? He's anti-science and nationalist, pro-birth, anti-immigration, and superstitious. All those are true, by the way. I am superstitious. I am anti-immigration. I am 100% pro-birth. I am a nationalist. I'm not anti-science. I like science. I think that science and Christianity kind of go hand in hand with each other. But I'm not a fascist. That's the only thing with that I would really have issue with.
What you would say you're racist?
No, I hate everybody equally.
I've never had the slightest soupçon of racism. You know, you're not good at tiptoeing across your words.
I would not be a good diplomat in the Rolle administration.
No, we will not. Yeah, and you will not be assigned to the State Department in the Ted Rolle administration. Back office for sure, or you know, someplace with no windows. You'll be locked in. So I guess I reject the characterization. Clearly a nationalist, clearly a right winger. That's true. Let me take them one at a time. First of all, I don't care if someone's superstitious or not. Everybody's got superstitions, I would argue. Anti-immigration. I don't think that Robbie is inherently anti-immigration. Like Robbie, you have said that you would be for immigration if we had 0% unemployment and a labor shortage, and everyone could get a good, who wanted a good job could get a good job, right?
Yeah, sure.
So that's not being anti-immigration and xenophobic, because if you were, you'd be like, I don't need those foreigners there no matter what, right? So this is about economic protectionism, which frankly, I am too. So, and in terms of racism, if you were racist, I don't think I could work with you. As for the right wing thing, hey, some of my best friends are right wingers, like Scott Stantis. I like people who believe in things, and Robbie believes in things, as opposed to like a corporate Democrat who kind of like just believes in voting for corporate Democrats, and that's about it. So that's how I justify it. I also don't think that it's a good idea for the left to be siloed in their friendships or in their working relationships. I know that one of the things that I have benefited my entire life from is meeting people who are different than I am, that come from a different background than I do. And also what people don't really realize is that like I come from a different background than I am at now, right? Like I've been homeless. I've slept on a subway. I've slept in a public park. I have, I have been poor as shit. I came from absolutely nothing in many ways. And so, it's like Robbie and I have bonded over that in our life stories. I mean, people are complicated. You got to, that's my answer to that question. Jamarl?
I don't have a need to justify my friendships in general. If to be bluntly honest, I don't give a shit how the public perceives my friendships in this case. On the other side, I kind of agree. I don't think Robbie are those things. I mean, just in having a conversation, the conversation usually becomes more complicated than just this kind of right wing stuff. It's a great, right? I don't think he's xenophobic. I don't think he's racist. Or at the very least, nothing that I've seen has communicated that. So I will take those off the table either way. So what? Somebody's against immigration. So what? It's their point of view. It's like, what am I supposed to do? Feel some kind of way about their point of view? Obviously, they're deal breakers. Meaning, if the person is like, yeah, killing babies in Gaza is fantastic. Okay, then yeah, I would have issues with that, right? Like, that's not me needing to defend anything. I would just have issues with it. But that's not where we are. People have points of view. Like, do I really want, like, this idea of, hey, you shouldn't go into Joe Rogan because Joe Rogan is a right winger. It's like, are you out of your mind? Joe Rogan does a huge podcast. People can have different points of view without those points of view being deal breakers. If that's what I'm saying. Meaning, there's a gradient. And I can accept the gradient. We used to talk to people on various points of view all the time. Yeah. Even though I might have disagreed with them vigorously on a host of issues, political and otherwise. It wasn't sufficient for me to put them in a category of I don't want to deal with them. My gradient is wider. I've had friends who are right wingers. I don't have to take issue with them. They have different points of view.
I just think it's retarded that, and I use that word deliberately, that they try to put y'all on the spot. Say, how could you be friends with this guy with unapproved opinions? First, who are you to decide that my opinions are unapproved? And second, if you think of any of those things, make the argument. Explain it to me how. Because I've said on this show multiple times, I mean, you cannot be a Christian and be a racist. It is impossible. I mean, the Bible actually commands you, the New Testament specifically, but Paul says, avoid genealogies. They profit you nothing. We're all the one blood. It doesn't matter. I mean, so if that's really all that you've got, I don't know. It's a weak argument for a very weak mind.
Well, we have another question. And oh my God, thank you so much for this very generous donation, $60 from GVMan43. I hope that you all can keep the train going. Well, with more donations like that, we will be able to. Love this show. All my hopes. That's a Star Trek quote. I forget from where exactly.
All my hopes?
I don't know that one. Do you?
All my hopes?
Yeah. I don't know.
Is that the name of one of the Star... Like, so, you know, the original series used to have these epic names. Like, All My Hopes could be one of the names of the shows. I don't know.
Well, all the series I watched always had a show title announced at the beginning of the episode, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's what I mean. I'm wondering, is this a show title of a thing?
Same thing for Deep Space Nine and whatever and whatnot. That's unusual, right? Like all, if you look at when you buy a DVD box back in the old days, it would always have the titles of the shows. Now on streaming, the only time you can find out what an episode of, say, The Sopranos was titled was like by looking, you know, like at the heading, but they don't show it in the show.
Yeah, they used to.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, it was really a Star Trek thing. Yeah. Anyway, we hope we can keep going too. That is our intention. Phileas Fogg, why wouldn't wages and productivity not diverge? Higher productivity means fewer workers needed, meaning decreased labor power.
True.
That's true.
Yeah. But my argument wasn't. My argument was that it was, my argument effectively, even when I was making the argument, was that as a corporate person, let's say if I own the company, I'm not paying you for your productivity, if that makes sense. I'm paying you a wage to do a particular job. I don't need it to line up with productivity. I pay you as less as I can pay you because that allows me to make more profit. I'm saying the incentive is for them to not pay the people in the sense of productivity. I'm saying it's a political choice. It's a political decision. This is supposed to be a representative government democracy. If we choose to make those things connected to one another, then we choose to make those things connected to one another. What is Jeff Bezos going to do? Not create Amazon because of it? He's still going to be, you know, $200 billion or whatever the thing is. He's still going to make a shitload of money. I'm saying, though, that everybody else should also profit. And, by the way, you would have a more stable society. Less crime, less, you know, affliction in regards to mental illness or mental stress and all of these things. Your society will be fundamentally better. It just will.
No.
I mean, that's my argument. That's my point of view.
No, I agree. I do think that, like, not everything is directly just about, like, what the market will bear. And, sure. By the way, political pressure is a market component, right? Like, so if political pressure comes to bear on your elected representatives and they're giving you shit, they're calling you in for hearings, and you're going to be regulated more, maybe you're going to be taxed more, maybe unless you straighten up, maybe even shut down if you don't straighten up. I mean, that's a market component, right? I mean, that is a reason to pay more.
Yes. In fact, I remember when I was abroad and I was talking to a guy and he said, he was talking about Bernie Sanders. And he was like, yeah, man, Bernie Sanders got us more money. Because if you remember, Sanders made it like a one-man campaign to go against Amazon to get $50 an hour minimum wage. Mm-hmm. And he was after him. And at a certain point, Amazon says, okay, we will give people the $15 hour minimum wage. Mind you, we're going to take it from other stuff, but ultimately we'll at least put the number in. Now, obviously, some people at the company was already paid more than that, but the issue was the people who weren't necessarily paid more than that, and he was using them as kind of symbol for it. Political pressure matters. It matters.
Yeah, and I'm not, and maybe it should. I mean, well, I do think it should. Here's a question for Robbie. Is asking, Robbie, can you defend Israel and still be Christian?
Yeah, and you can be a Zionist and be a Christian too. It just means that you don't understand your Bible. You're sitting down, you're listening to John Hagee, or you're reading a Scofield reference Bible, and Scofield got his notes from Darby, who did seances in his castle there in Scotland. So short answer is yes.
That's what I thought that was.
Yeah.
Scofield, he has a bite. I'm sorry, Robbie. Please continue.
Yeah. But no, to answer your question, the answer is yes. The problem is that they're misguided and that they're deceived because they don't study. They don't show themselves approved. Listen, I used to be a Zionist. I did.
What changed your mind?
I read the Bible. I mean, because instead of listening to what other people said, I decided, no, listen, I've got the perfect word of God right here written in the King's English. I'm going to read it myself specifically on this issue. And so I read the four Gospels, the Gospel of Luke, the Gospel of John are fantastic. Then go through, read the book of Romans. Paul does an excellent job at describing what a Christian is, how they're grafted in, how that works, who the chosen people are. It's not a race. It's not an ethnicity. And then the book of Galatians just goes through and it chapter by chapter by chapter completely destroys the entire concept of dispensationalism. So seriously, all Christians have to do is stop listening to Trump, stop listening to Hagee, stop listening to all these Zionist pigs and pick up the word of God and read it. That's all you have to do. John Nelson Darby, the dude, he used to do seances in his castle in Scotland with his wife. They actually would commune with a demon. They used to commune with an actual demon. They would do seances and they communed with a demon.
Or, I mean, they did they,
how do you know it was a demon?
God of absinthe and think they were, or were they, do you think?
No, they were doing seances. Scofield was doing seances.
Scofield wasn't. Darby was. So Darby wrote down the notes that Scofield then used to put in his Bible. And the way he got it in was he worked with the Moody's because Bible colleges in the late 1800s, early 1900s really weren't a thing. And a lot of people wanted to study, but learn to be preachers. So they put these notes in underneath the pages of the Bible to explain what they were reading. So instead of going through and studying, you have someone else think for you. And so the notes that Scofield used were Darby's notes. Darby actually made his own version of the Bible. See, and this is stuff that Christians don't know. John Nelson Darby.
I remember that, I thought Scofield was the one that was in the castle in England doing the seances.
That was Darby. It was Darby and his wife.
And they were bringing in scientists and everything in order to show that the seances were real.
I mean,
at no point did I hear them say that they were communing with a demon.
Yeah, they were. And his letters, I can't remember what the name of the entity. I'm calling it a demon. That's the word that I'm using.
Okay, thank you. I just want to make that clear. You're calling it a demon. You're adding it.
What was it?
It's a supernatural being, and it's pretty safe to assume it's not an angel giving them another testament, another revelation of Christianity.
Could it have just been a ghost?
Like, that's what I'm pointing out. We have no idea what
it was. Something. Yeah, it was something.
Right, but you're assuming it's evil and a demon.
100%.
Why?
Why are you assuming that?
Because the modern state of Israel would not exist without this. So it's a counterfeit. Everything that Satan does is a counterfeit. Like the Antichrist is a counterfeit Messiah. The false prophet is an Antichrist Holy Spirit. Everything he does is a counterfeit of what actually exists, except in God's order. This is how I'm going to tie this all back together. So thank y'all for listening to me on this. The whole reason, the whole idea of Zionism exists up until the early 1900s, this thing that they call replacement theology has been the theology of Christianity for 2,000 years, which is the covenant was the Jews rejected the Messiah. The covenant with them was ended. The new covenant, that's why it's called the New Testament. It's a new covenant set up for believers who believe on Jesus Christ, who is the fulfillment of the book of Genesis, all of the Old Testament, all the law of the prophets is fulfilled in the person of Jesus Christ. What what dispensationalism teaches specifically is that the Jews are still the chosen people of God, irrespective of the fact that they reject Christ and irrespective of the fact that they go to hell whenever they die. That's not a loving act. I'd like to point that out to Despies too, but that's neither here nor there. And that is how they whipped up all this popular support in independent churches, believing that the Jews are the chosen people of God. And that's where they take Genesis chapter 12, verse 3 out of context, specifically to Abraham saying, if God will bless those who bless thee and curse those who curse thee. That's where all this comes from. Without dispensationalism, you would have zero evangelical support for Christianity. You would not have CUFI, Christians United for Israel. You would not have the Moody's going out there holding water from Netanyahu. And so therefore, he would not be able to wage the genocide that he is doing using our tax dollars by hoodwinking people who believe in the Prince of Peace.
And you're attributing to the demonic, quote unquote, 100%. Entity that they met in the castle in England.
Yes, because the Star Rim Fan, for the Zionist Christian, the Star Rim Fan takes the place of the cross. If you say that I must bless the nation of Israel, the nation state of Israel, and if I don't, then the wrath of God will be upon me, even if that nation is doing things that the Lord commands you not to do. That's the only way you can make that happen is if you convince people that these people are still the chosen people of God. Basically, you have to convince Christians who are not of Jewish descent that these people are somehow closer to God than you are, even though you accept His Son as your Lord and Savior.
And how do we know that the entity actually told them that, as opposed to them having a political agenda and putting that information in?
Well, I mean,
or that they didn't just make up the whole fucking thing because they were a bunch of bored, rich tards drinking a lot of absinthe.
Well, to be fair, they actually took scientists with them as they were doing those seances.
Right. Yeah.
And had them in the room with them as they were doing this stuff because they were trying to get across that there's something that's going on. I mean, it was like photographic stuff. There was all sorts of weird shit.
They were doing all kinds of weird things.
Yeah, they were doing all sorts of weird shit. Now, they could have faked it. So fair enough. I accept that. I do accept that. but it was very weird.
Like stuff. Your friend pulling on the Ouija, you know, it's like that.
but it was weird.
I wasn't there, obviously. It was before I was born. So all we have is a written testimony.
Yeah.
And then the point is, though, is that Schofield used the notes that were written by Darby to create the Schofield Reference Bible. So Schofield, have y'all ever done a study on that guy?
No, I just knew I'm into weird shit, which is why I knew about the castle.
You like
don't know what the deal thing was like.
No, you like weird stuff? Seriously, do a deep dive into Schofield. The guy, he left his first wife, married another one. He had to run from the law. He was convicted of a fraud. I mean, the guy was a weasel of the highest order.
I was gonna say, it seems to me like he's just starting his career as future president of the United States.
Then what you got to do is just kind of start figuring out, you know, where exactly did he get the funding for his Schofield Bible that he then gave to the Moody's, who are this big evangelical group. There's the biggest one, really, for trained preachers in Chicago, Illinois at the time. And then all of a sudden, the Schofield Bible then just goes out to every church every seminary in the country, teaching you everything you need to know through doctrine isn't through studying what the Bible says. Instead, you study what these notes say up under it. That's the problem.
We only have 16 minutes left, so we should wrap on this and move on to some more questions.
Yeah. Well, listen, this is more important, Dad.
Okay, Rob.
I always hijack the show.
I'm just teasing you there. Maybe Bluth Funk. Thank you so much for the $10. Hey, guys, love you, and I wish I had more money to give you. Thank you so much. Here's a silly, albeit classic one. I've never heard this. Not sure if this has been adjudicated. Is a hot dog a sandwich? Love all three of you. Of course it is.
No, it's not. It's a hot dog.
A hot dog is just meat between two pieces of bread. I mean, a sandwich is meat between two pieces of bread. The end.
It's a sandwich is like with sliced meat on it. I mean, like a hot dog is not even flat. It's round. It's a different thing.
Is cereal a soup?
Right. Yeah. I think Ted might be right. You're right, Ted. I think you're right.
We're settling this. I did not know this was classic. We're settling it here. Okay. The real Timba. Why can't we agree that being a good person is all that matters? Having different opinions helps society progress. We often learn through disagreement.
True. But what people do is often based on the ideas that they have. And when people have certain ideas, other people believe that they're willing to allow certain things to happen in the world. Like, you can be the nicest person in the world, but if you think that it's okay for killing babies in Gaza, I'm going to feel some kind of way. I hope that makes, does that make sense? Like,
well, yeah. Like, for example, here's a question, right? So nationalism or religion, for example, that have just come up in this show, those have been, you know, those have been ideologies that have led to the murders of millions of people. Right. You know, is it inherent to, you know, is the idea that, like, you care about your nation state that you were, presumably born into, is that idea going to lead to genocide? We have to argue about that. I don't know.
I'll say no.
I don't know if it inherently leads to that, but it has.
It happened.
But was that is that a pretext, or, you know what I mean? Like, yeah.
You've had authoritarian governments, or let's say nationalist governments, all over the world. It doesn't necessarily mean it goes to genocide. I would argue I'm a nationalist on some level. No, I'm not gun-toting and everything else, but I do care about this country more than other countries, full stop.
Me too.
And policy, from my point of view, would fall in line with what is in the best interest of America and how do we make our shiny city on the hill, that type of stuff. So, but it depends on what you mean by nationalists, right? Like, you can have somebody who is a lunatic, in which case, yeah, it may. I mean, but that's like where they always make the argument, well, socialism always leads to authoritarian governments.
That's clearly not true.
Yeah.
This will hurt people's brains. It's not inherently true that fascism necessarily always leads to butchery. I mean, you know, Francisco Franco was not nearly as violent as Hitler. Mussolini was not as violent as Hitler. So the question is, are some ideas so evil that they shouldn't be countenanced?
Like what?
That's what I'm trying to figure that out.
Racial
superiority is way up there. That idea that, you know, because, you know, I look a certain way, I'm better than you. First of all, it's hard to see any net benefit except maybe racial pride, but that's not a very big benefit.
We call ourselves indispensable.
Right.
You know, we call ourselves, what's the other word that we use when we're talking about Americans
in
the larger world? Yeah. I mean, we do that all the time.
It's like being God's chosen people, right? It's like, I remember the first time I read about the idea that, you know, Jews considered themselves to be God's chosen people. I'm like, oh, that's not going to cause trouble.
It's like God favors us. Really? I mean, to me, that sounds like the king. Where the king is like, the king was obviously appointed by God. Was he?
Yeah, like, was he? Like, it's like that's pretty self-serving. It's like the first time I was at a flea market, and I saw a Nazi belt buckle from a soldier. And in German, it says, God is with us. Hilarious, yeah. Considering that Nazism was a, you know, very secular, anti-religious ideology. But even so, they had to play to that.
That's amazing. It's just amazing. I love, like, people invoke God. Like, he's with me on this one.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of think it's an evil idea that, like, some people are worth more than others in terms of
it is. By definition, it is. I mean, you could say that some people have more productive value. Okay, fair enough. But we're not really talking about productive value. We're talking about something else. Like, this is more esoteric in a way. Yeah, do people have value or don't they?
And but that's true.
Is that store of value? What's the word I'm looking for? Can't be diminished, if that makes sense.
Well, I guess it just comes down to a big disagreement that you and me have. Like, you talk about, you know, it's wrong to be killing babies in Gaza. I agree with you. It's also wrong to be killing babies in the womb. So that's just one of the disagreements that we're just always going to have, because I believe they're humans and you think they're something else.
I do think it's killing babies in the womb is wrong. I just think it's a wrong that we have to be able to do. Like, it's sort of like if you have, I don't know, bees take residence up in your house. Look, bees are important. We shouldn't be killing bees. We have a shortage of bees. But if they're in your house, you got to kill them. You can't live with them in your house. And it's like that. Like, you just, it's like sort of like, you got to be, you have to, sometimes you have to have the ability to do something that is wrong.
And I want to deter any abortion. Like, it's not like I have this hard on for women getting abortions.
Yes.
Not that. I hope that's not what I've communicated.
We want contraception to be readily available. We want people to make intelligent decisions. I mean, Lord knows. I had a friend, he was married. This was almost enough to turn me pro-life. She intended to get pregnant, got pregnant, and then decided to have an abortion because her husband said, "Oh, we're going on a cruise, and you know, I don't know if I want to see you with your baby bump on the cruise. So we'll get you pregnant next year." So she had an abortion. I thought it was absolutely one of the most disgusting things I'd ever heard in my life. You know, it was just like, I was like, are you fucking serious? I was like, abortion's not, I thought you were pro-choice. I'm like, yeah, and you're making the wrong choice.
Right. It's not birth control.
Right. You're married. Right. You're married. Like, you know, what's the main reason people get married is to legitimize children. And they were rich. So there was no like financial issue at all. Like, pregnant people go on cruises or don't go on the cruise, whatever. Like, it's like,
I want you sexy on this cruise. I don't want the baby.
Yeah. Okay, by the way, I was just full disclosure. I mean, I had mad sex with my ex when she was like 8.5 months pregnant. It was the best sex we ever had. I mean,
did you?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Fantastic.
Okay. And two big shout outs. Stormborn 8686 on Rumble became a new channel subscriber, and Mad Napkins on YouTube. So thank you both so much for becoming paid subscribers to the channel. Appreciate y'all.
That's seriously much appreciated. Horses are people too. Hey, Ted, we have enough time. I do love horses. Hey, Ted, could you tell a story from your family about the French Resistance? I love studying the different resistance groups of the time. All right, I'll tell you a really dark one because I've been in a dark mood. So France was invaded in June of 1940. In 1942, my grandfather was arrested and was sent to Buchenwald. He basically fought with the partisans for 2 years. He didn't see his family for 2 years. My mom, at this beginning of this episode, was 7, very impressionable age. She didn't see her dad again until she was 9. During the French occupation. During the summer of 1944, they had what they called the épuration, the purification. And there, in every liberated French village and town, there was a gap of up to 6 to 8 weeks between the time that the Nazis evacuated and that the Allies arrived and established military government. During that period, the French killed, summarily executed, close to 100,000 collaborators and alleged collaborators and, you know, women who had slept with the Germans and all that. And so the day that my grandfather got back to his town, my mom was walking home from school with a friend. And for the first time in 2 years, she saw her father. And he was knocking on the front door of the only overweight lady in town, the head of the Red Cross. She was a war profiteer all throughout the war. She'd been stealing the Red Cross parcels that were supposed to be distributed to poor people like her and her family and selling them on the black market, which was a huge problem in occupied France. She saw her dad and his comrade with small machine guns knock on the door. The lady came to the door. She knew what was going on. It was the épuration. And they said, "Bitch, you know why we're here. Get down on you have 5 minutes to pray, get on your knees." And she said, "I don't need to pray." And he said, "All the better," and popped her in the head, right in front of her door. He turned around and saw his daughter for the first time. My mom's heart was full of love for her father, ran up, jumped into his arms, and it was a happy reunion.
That's a beautiful story.
Thank you. But it's dark.
Sorry. Yeah, but I get, I mean, they're collaborators. I mean, what were you supposed to do, right? Like,
that's what my mom thought. She was like, oh, thank God.
There's an incentive built into doing that at the end of a conflict in order to kind of get across to not do that going forward. Meaning, in a similar situation, we don't want society to function this way. We want society to resist. That's kind of just a thing. So I get it. That is wild to me. And that at that age, that she understood what was happening.
Oh, yeah.
Like, she wasn't horrified by what she saw.
Her second grade teacher was executed in front of the entire class for being in the resistance.
Wow. That's what I mean. Like, she, the context, they understood what was going on.
They totally, totally did. Let's see. I can't believe we're R. Jamrod. I can't believe we're having a discussion about abortion and bee infestations without ever once referencing the Bee Movie. One of the better kid movies. Maybe Bluth Funk. Ted, do you have any thoughts on the pros and cons of the French parenting style? Any you recommend? Thanks for the $5. There are many different French parenting styles, so I'd have to be a little more clear. I would say, I kind of don't. I need clarity on that. Like,
French parenting styles. There's a cultural significant difference in the way we raise our kids.
I'm asking.
Sure. I don't know.
I don't really know either. I'm trying to think. First of all, the French definitely treat their kids like they're little adults, right? Like, they don't baby them. And so, for example, they don't hide conversations about sex or money or serious issues. Drinking is obviously allowed and encouraged once you hit like 10, 11, 12. It's basically like, I'm serious. You're just not treated like a baby. It's like the way, I know parents who treat their 40-year-olds like babies. It's in this country. I maybe that's what she means. I'm not sure.
Okay. Interesting.
Oh, we have a new monthly supporter too. We've had enough. Thank you so much for becoming a monthly supporter on Rumble. Much appreciated. Okay. I'm trying to think. Robbie, do we have anything else we need to?
Oh, any ads?
There's no ad.
You can see. Yep, there are no ads right now.
There were no ads this morning either. I wonder what's going on with Rumble. It's not like our numbers are down.
Actually, we've got one now. 1 second.
We do?
Yeah, we do for Rumble Premium.
Huh. It's not showing up for me.
Yeah. Let me go ahead and you probably just have to refresh. I'll go ahead and pop it up for us here real quick. So we can do 1775 coffee, or we can do Rumble Premium. So do you want coffee or Rumble Premium? Either way works.
Oh, let's do Rumble Premium. I'm tired of the coffee.
Fine, we'll do Rumble Premium. And I will put this over Ted since he's to the right of me. 1 second here. You probably noticed Rumble is growing fast. It's not slowing down. They're building a real alternative to big tech that puts creators first and actually protects free speech. And now there's Rumble Premium, an easy way to upgrade your experience. With Premium, you get ad-free viewing across the platform, no pre-roll, no interruptions, just the content you came for. Plus, Premium members unlock exclusive content like bonus videos, behind-the-scenes drops, and more from your favorite creators. Right now, Rumble is offering $10 off an annual subscription. Just go to rumble.com/premium and use the promo code studio at checkout. That's rumble.com/premium, promo code studio, no ads, more freedom, and content you actually care about. That is the deal.
Here's your reminder. Check Monstera soil moisture.
I just hear here's stuff happening here. Like Roguebot says I should do another Zionist ad. Remember that? Oh my God.
Stormborn wants to know what coffee am I drinking now that we're not doing 1775. Whenever we get it, we're getting 8 o'clock coffee here from our local grocery store called Smith's. It's good coffee.
It's so Nick Duncan, huh?
That stuff was like tar. No, I did not like it. I was not impressed with the Dunkin' Donuts coffee.
Mm.
They're, I have very few guilty pleasures in my life. Like, no, I don't drink, I don't smoke. But I drink coffee like a Frenchman drinks wine. And I imagine that when God takes you out of a mortal coil, it will be because of caffeine abuse.
Yeah, coffee's good for you. Coffee's good for you. You should drink more coffee.
I hate, listen, without coffee, I would die.
Well, I would simply die. Yeah, I'm the same way. You know, it's not a coincidence that the importation of coffee into Europe precedes the Renaissance by about 20 years. So.
Oh, I have a question for you. Do you think that the fall of Constantinople in 1453 is what triggered the Renaissance? Just all of the Greek literature and stuff that the Romans took out of Constantinople before the fall. Do you think that's what triggered the Renaissance?
Well, what would be the relationship? Like how?
Well, because they knew that the city was going to fall. And so at the last 6 months, before the Roman Empire finally fell, a lot of these scholars and things, they went west. They went into Italy, to the Papal States, and then to Milan specifically with the Textus Receptus. That's where the King James Bible comes from. A lot of Aristotle, a lot of classical thought. Those are all kept there in Constantinople. And so they went west. Do you think that that's what triggered the Renaissance?
I think there were multiple causes, but I think that's a really good theory.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I like my coffee theory too.
Yeah, coffee's important.
No, seriously, I'm far more creative with it than without it. No question about it.
Horses are people. Oh my God. Robbie, I actually work for a coffee wholesaler. I'd be happy to send you guys over some free coffee. Email me.
What?
WestGlaciergaming@gmail.com. Email me.
WestGlaciergaming@gmail.com.
I will be your whore for coffee.
I wouldn't go that far.
If you don't live far from me, I'll cut your lawn. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Listen, I didn't say sex. I can whore myself out in various ways. There are arrangements.
All right, Robbie. I'm going to ask this question. So you're familiar with the movie Indecent Proposal?
Isn't that the one where the woman wanted to give the dude a blowjob and
No. That was the one with Demi Moore, which she was going after.
Is married to Woody Harrelson, and they happen to get drunk with a very rich Robert Redford.
That's right.
And Robert Redford says, like, "Hey, so everyone's got a price. Like, you'd let me fuck your wife like for $1 million, right?" And then, long story short, they do. They draw up a contract, and he does. And because it's completely unrealistic, Woody Harrelson loses his mind and fucks up the entire marriage, and basically their whole life falls apart. It's one of those zeitgeist movies that, like, you know, Michael Douglas used to make all the time. Anyway, so Robbie, you know where I'm going with this question.
Yeah, what's your question?
Okay, so what would it take you to violate your marital vow? Would $1 million do it?
No.
10?
Nope.
100?
No. I made a vow to God. No.
What if it was a clone of your wife and the $1 million? Would that work?
Well, you can't clone a human, so that's a non sequitur.
You can clone a human. Yeah, it's been done already.
It may take 5 years. You can do it.
It's been done in China.
Yeah. Has it?
Yeah. You can make your own little fang in real life.
That'd be awesome. But no, I had no idea. I did not know that. I know they had talked about trying to clone embryos and stuff, but then they actually went.
It's illegal, but it's not impossible. It's
undoable, right.
Right. Yeah, no. I mean, humans are totally clonable now.
I just wonder if it'd have a soul. I would think not.
Yeah, why not? It's alive.
Because the soul is created.
What is it?
I guess it depends on what happens.
A soul, a twin is just a clone, really. Right.
So what? Well, say that again. Because I was looking at the chat.
Is genetically just a clone, right? Twins have souls. Why wouldn't a clone?
No, I guess that's what I'm saying. Is how would it be done? Like if you're using a sperm and an egg and you're just gene splicing.
Yeah.
Put it this way, it would be very strange for it to be an empty vessel. I mean, at that point, it would be kind of an invocation of God, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just create this embryo, and this thing grows in a tube somewhere. I mean, give it 20 years.
What if God personally promises you that like the genocide in Gaza would come to an end as a result of you doing this?
First of all, he would never command me to sin. So right there, I would know that that's not a God. That's of Satan. Mm-hmm. Second, if God was going to do that, he would just simply smite Israel with his righteous hand and put an end to that devilish apostate state and be done with it.
This is why people think you're racist, by the way, Robbie.
I don't care.
God can't get involved, though.
I understand what you mean, but like, yeah.
God has worked through vessels. And yeah, so sure. He needs you to do it in order to create a chain reaction that stops the genocide. But he can't get involved.
Well, no, he would just raise someone up. Like, for example, before Cyrus is born, God, was it? It's the book of Jeremiah. I don't remember exactly. But if you do a search for the name Cyrus, the first time that Cyrus is mentioned is 150 years before the man is born. I'm going to raise up my servant Cyrus, and he will bring my people back to their ancestral land. He named Cyrus by name, Cyrus the Great.
It was written after the fact, right? So this would actually be a good believer versus unbeliever debate, right? It wasn't written contemporaneously.
That's what was written hundreds of years after the stuff happened.
Yeah. It was written before.
It's written after the fact.
The copies we have are written after the fact, but the original was written before.
No.
Robbie, yes. Many of the people in the Bible who were writing that stuff was writing it with historical context. They were looking back on it. Don't take my word for it. Look it up.
No, I'm telling you, the prophetic books are written ahead of time.
Okay.
We'll look into that. Okay.
There's a question. Mark 16:61. What is Robbie's opinion of the Christians skinning alive the mathematician Hypatia in Alexandria and the burning of the library? I think those are both terrible, terrible, terrible things, and they should not have happened. They screwed up.
What do you say about that? That skinning a person alive is great. Like, that's a
hell of a problem. Yeah, I mean, there's a problem.
I mean, who hates mathematicians that much?
Right, 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 right. Hate the way you do quadratic equations.
Fuck that Pythagorean motherfucker.
Yeah, right, right, right. Pythagorean theorem, my ass.
Yeah, I'm sure there are crazy controversies in the world of mathematics. You know, it's like where people just get so angry about shit like this.
It's banning the Olympics. So anything, that's the problem, is that whenever you try to force religion in the government, because at that point it becomes a tool of control and oppression. It's no longer a choice. That's why I oppose Sharia law. If I decide that I don't want to follow Muhammad and I want to convert to Christianity or Buddhism or become an atheist or whatever else, under Sharia, I'd be executed if I was a Muslim. With Christianity, no one ever was brought up.
There's no monolithic Sharia law, right?
It's taking the text at face value for what it says. Whereas, for example, in 1 John, it talks about if someone leaves Christianity, there is no penalty. It just says, well, the person was never, he was one of us, but wasn't of us. Basically, he was shamming. It wasn't legitimate. He really wasn't one of us. No, that's the problem with conversion by the sword. You can't get more anti-Christian than that. What the Catholic Church did in the Americas was completely and totally wrong. The Inquisition was a butchery, and they did it just like what the Zionists are supporting now in Israel. They are violating the laws of God for a political agenda, while Christians, well-meaning or not, who are just ignorant, sit on their hands and do nothing. That's why you got to study your Bibles.
And on that note.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Much appreciated. We will be back tomorrow with the regular show at 9 a.m. Eastern time. Thank you so much for your support, for your questions. You guys have been great. We are going to do another Q&A show on Wednesday. So in the meantime, see you tomorrow. Jamarl on Solo at 7 a.m. Deprogram at 9, TMI at 10. So we can keep you busy for at least 4 hours tomorrow. Thanks so much, and see you guys later. And now I'm just looking for the little thing to click, and then we will be gone. Bye.